Welcome to Inside Analog Photography Radio Program. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is all about traditional process photography. We talk about instant photography. We talk about black and white. We talk about color film. We talk about dry plate, wet plate, you name it, alternate printing processes, everything going on in analog photography. And of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is brought to you by Fujifilm over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, www.richardphotolab.com, DR5, www.dr5.com, Iger Studios, check them out, igerstudios.com, and of course, Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. Our media partners, www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group, the community for analog photography, our photographic philanthropy partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, www.geh.org. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to have with Cheryl Nicolai. Cheryl is a black and white portrait artist out of Denver, Colorado. We're going to talk to her about her art, her use of film, and all the great stuff that she's up to. Cheryl, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderfully. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program. We've been looking at your work for quite a while, and it's just beautiful photography. Very cool what you're up to. Cheryl, tell us about yourself and what you consider, what kind of photography that you're doing, and then we'll get into some more detailed things here. But tell us about Cheryl here.
Well, I call my work emotive portraiture because I'm not specific to kids anymore. I used to be. I like to try to catch the raw side of people. I shoot all black and white, all film, always have, never been digital. And my goal really is to catch real life and the real side of people that you don't often see in pictures.
So typically, everything's environmental, nothing's set up, everything's natural light. Tell me about your photography in general. People definitely need to go to your website, and we'll give all that address out in the link, of course, on our website. But tell us about what you're doing when you're trying to get what you're doing.
Well, I do use all natural light. I wouldn't necessarily call myself a documentary photographer because I'm not the sort that just sits back and watches. I get very involved. I like to be very conversational in my sessions. I'll catch a little bit of everything. I do like to watch people. I do like to observe. But I tend to be very intensely connected, or I try to be, with my subjects and pull something out of them. The younger they are, the more I have to work to do that and the more rewarding it is. But that's really my goal, to catch intensity out of my subjects. Sometimes that means I can just catch them where they are, do a few pictures on the fly. A lot of times it means I have to really work to get something out of them in the light that I choose to put them in. So I wouldn't call myself documentary. I also wouldn't say that I pose things. I try to work somewhere in between.
Very cool. So let's talk about how you got into photography in general. When did you start shooting?
Actually, not terribly long ago. I think it's been about 8 years since I first picked up the camera. I was always involved in music and drawing and painting and other kinds of art. Wasn't interested in photography at all. Never took any sort of photography classes in school. Actually, I've never had a class on photography at all. And I kind of fell into it backward back when the hand coloring trend was going on. I started painting other photographers' pictures and then gradually got into the photography myself and got obsessed. So that's where it started.
Now, what made you start with film and keep with film here? Because if you only started 8-10 years ago, you could have easily started off in digital.
Well, it's what I had available, to be honest. I didn't have a digital camera available to me. I didn't have the means to buy one. I had an old film camera sitting there, and so that's what I started with. Started doing the C41 process because it was easier to have somebody else process my film, and pretty quickly realized that it wasn't the look that I wanted. So started in with regular black and white film and then realized it was cheaper and easier to process it myself. So I just never really started on the digital road. I started on film and I've never seen the need to switch.
So tell me about your love of film. Why do you like to shoot analog?
Well, I'm not terribly fond of computers anyway. I like feeling that I've made something with my hands. I like the chemicals. I like that whole process. It's probably a lot to do with my background in drawing and painting and all of that. I just like the feeling of creating something that's real that I can hold in my hand. I also like the depth and the grain in film. It's nothing like digital noise. People don't realize those are two entirely different things. I like the dimension that I get in my black and whites, especially because I shoot all medium and large format.
So what's your favorite things to shoot? Do you like kids the best, or do you like shooting adults? What do you really like yourself to do?
I like people of all ages. I'm really not interested in photographing anything that's not people-related. Landscapes are not my thing. I don't understand them. I can't relate to them. People of all ages, and also objects that belong to people or that have been left behind. Anything that I can really relate to a person. doesn't really matter to me what age. I actually approach every age of subject the same way. I always made it a big point to be extremely respectful and never condescending of my subjects, even if it's a two-year-old. So I really find very little difference between working with a kindergartner or working with a senior citizen. It's no different to me.
So you feel you need to be a wrangler with either one?
No, actually, I'm not much of a wrangler. I've kind of got my own techniques for making sure that I'm interesting enough and the process is interesting enough to keep people there. Even if they're two, there's always a way to get them interested and to relate to them. I just may have less time with a two-year-old than I do with a 92-year-old.
So let's chat about your style of what you're shooting. When you look at your photography and you look at these portraits that you're doing, I guess we would want to call this environmental because there's no studio staged works. You look at your work and it looks like you're there, but really nobody knows that you're there. You're like the fly on the wall, but the stuff has a very unique sense to it.
But I like to try to pull something out of the person that isn't necessarily going to be seen, but they're very aware that I'm there. I'm very much involved. I get a lot of eye contact, but I also just like to sit back after I've gotten that connection with my subject. And after we've connected in a meaningful way, that gives me the ability to sit back and see what they do and watch their expressions and catch something that's really very characteristic of them. It's really a give and take. It's a dance between the subject and the photographer to see what you're going to get and how there's going to be enough give and take to get something meaningful.
You also have a posting up here on your blog about you get what you give. And I think you can definitely tell in your work that you're putting out something that people are connecting with.
Right. It's really a goal of mine. And I'm always fond of saying that the portrait is a side effect of a strong human connection. And I really believe that. I'm not just out to get the picture. I'm really out to understand that person, and then the photography part kind of takes care of itself. If I'm focused on getting the picture, I think I've missed the point. I like to focus on valuing that person and making them feel like they have an audience and somebody that's listening to them. And then the expressions kind of just happen.
What do you feel is the biggest challenge for you when you're doing your work? When you're working with anybody, like you said, kids or seniors, even pets, it's whatever you're shooting, what's the biggest challenge for you typically?
I have a very short attention span, so I really have to fight myself sometimes. Sometimes it's lack of attention, or I kind of move on too fast, but other times it's over-focus.
Is there a certain technical aspect that you're trying to achieve with the pictures, or using a specific film and exposure to create a certain kind of mood? How do you like to use your technique and technical abilities to modify or enhance the scenario or the person that you're shooting?
I'm very, very consistent in the materials that I use. I've shot the same film, used the same developer, the same camera. I almost never change my lenses because I don't want to be focused on the technique. I know my lighting. I know how to get the effect that I'm after. Really, for me, the most important thing about technique is that it doesn't get in the way. It needs to support the mood and the subject, but it needs to not take over. If somebody looks at my work and the first thing they see is the lighting or the composition, then I'm probably not satisfied with that picture. I try to just keep it as absolutely simple as possible. It'd be a little bit difficult for me now that Tri-X 220 or 320 in 220 format is out of production. That's going to be a bit of a challenge, but I'll figure it out.
So is that what you've been shooting on?
I shoot almost everything in Tri-X, all formats. Every now and then I'll shoot 35mm if I need to, but my medium and large format has always been Tri-X for years. I usually don't stray.
So have you consequently started to stock up here?
I'm about to. I've got feelers out here and there to locate all of it that I can. But really, there's not a lot of point in hoarding it because I shoot so much of it, it's going to be gone. So I might as well just kind of bite the bullet and make the adjustment. But it is difficult when you're shooting toddlers or horses to have to reload after every 15 frames. So really disappointed that there's no 220 option anymore, but I'll adjust.
Now, let's sort of talk about that gear-wise here. I know you said you'd like to just keep one body and one lens. What are you actually shooting with?
I shoot with a Bronica ETRS for almost everything, 75mm 2.8 lens, and that meets just about all of my needs. Every now and then, if I'm limited on space, I'll shoot with a shorter lens, but it's almost always that 75mm lens. It's my comfort zone, and I like to keep my work looking very consistent. I'm not really one to go for wild angles or wildly different perspectives. I'm just very focused on the people.
And what about 35?
I use it very rarely, and it's really in a situation where I have a lot of action going on really quickly. I shot an NFL game on black and white 35mm film, so I'm not going to bother with medium format in that situation. But it's really rare. I would say that I've probably shot maybe 10 rolls of 35mm in the last 5 years. It's very rare.
Wow. And what about large format?
I bring it out every now and then, but the attention span thing bites me on large format. After I've exposed maybe two shots, I'm done, ready to pick up the medium format. The medium format is perfect for me because it makes me slow down and anticipate my shots, whereas 35 millimeter, I can just shoot randomly. But large format is a little bit frustrating for me when I'm really wanting to get something done.
So with your Tri-X 320 that you have been shooting and currently will for a bit, how do you like to expose it? Do you like to shoot it at 320, at 200, at 600? What do you like? Because it has such a large latitude that you can play with.
Yeah, and I do. I try to shoot it at 320 whenever I can, but I have pulled it really slow, and I've also shot it at 12,000 something or other. It'll do anything I need it to, especially because I'm very consistent with how I expose and how I develop. So it's a film that I know very well will do anything I need it to.
How do you find that your need for perfection works in with what you're doing when you're working with people? Because you don't have 100% complete control over everything.
Yeah, I kind of let go of the need for perfection a while ago. I think it's a great thing when you're learning and when you're trying to get your technique down, because it is so important that your technique is strong so you don't have to think about it. But perfection, I think, is a relative term. I don't necessarily think that perfection is always the strongest way to go about a picture. I think sometimes that imperfection and the little bits of quirkiness that sneak into a picture are what make it real. It's nice when everything is perfect and lines up just so, but I think I've started to define perfection more in what I've managed to capture from that person. Have I pulled out something really memorable? If so, I'm happy.
When you're out shooting and you're interacting with a client, how much time do you spend with them to actually be able to gain this personal connection with who you're going to be shooting, to get relaxed with them? Do you have meetings prior to the fact that you get to know these people a little bit more, or can you just sort of walk in, give me 5 minutes and let's roll?
Well, I'm definitely a people person. I'm used to being on stage, I'm used to teaching, I'm used to doing workshops. So I've never really found the need to do an appointment in advance and talk to people. It's really very easy for me to walk into a situation and feel comfortable and make other people comfortable. But it's not to say that that's the right way of doing it. It works for me, and other people are more introverted and it takes a little bit more time for them to get comfortable. I find that it's a really quick process to be able to find some sort of common ground and to relate to a person. Because of that, I find it really quick to jump into a session. I'm not in a hurry. It just typically tends to happen that way. In an average portrait session, I would say anywhere between an hour and 2 hours. 2 hours would be long. That includes if I'm working with kids, they might stop for a break or a snack. I do spend a lot of time just talking to people and getting to know them without the camera being up in front of my face. I think that gets forgotten sometimes, especially these days with most people shooting digital. It's just so easy to keep the camera up constantly in front of your face and just fire away. And the problem is you don't give your subjects an opportunity to bond with you and to see you in your face and to identify with you as a person instead of a photographer. So I try to avoid that at all costs. I shoot when there's a reason to.
Do you use the waist level finder on your Bronica, or do you use through the eye prism one?
Well, actually, when I started, the medium format camera that I bought first had a waist level finder. And going from 35 millimeter, I really thought that it was never, ever going to work for me. So I tried it, it got frustrated, put it away for a few weeks. But once I really committed to using the waist level finder, I got good at it. And that's what most of my earlier images that are still on my site, and still images that people know me for, they were mostly made with that waist level finder. I happened to get a really great deal on a 645 that was a prism finder. So I've gotten used to that, and I do feel a little bit lazy now getting to just look through the lens, but it works for me, and it is a little bit faster. It's a bit more practical with kids.
Do you find that when you're using a prism finder that you have less of that connection to where if you were shooting the Bronica with a waist level finder or a Hasselblad that you can hold the camera lower, you can actually have 100% face contact with the person and then just sort of glance down when you're shooting? Or do you find that you can compose and you work better through the prism finder?
Well, actually, my eyesight is so incredibly terrible that the only way that I could shoot with a waist level finder was to actually have it all the way up to my eye with a magnifier on.
Okay.
So, my vision is somewhere around 26,000 or so. So there's really no difference. I have to have it directly up to my face either way.
Let's talk about your process. So once you've done these incredible shoots here, you're processing your own film, correct?
Yes. I'm very hard-nosed about that. Nobody else gets to touch my negatives.
So you're doing this by hand, you're using a Jobo, how are you processing?
All entirely by hand, so I can do 5 35 millimeters or 3 medium formats, all by hand, all at my kitchen sink.
Now are you printing too, or are you just doing analog capture and hybrid after?
No, almost all of my prints are traditional darkroom prints, mostly fiber prints. Sometimes I print them. I do have a lab here in town. I'm very lucky to have a great printer here in town that can print all the way up to, I don't know, something crazy like 8 feet long. So I try to do the smaller ones myself just to have a bit more control over it, save myself some cost and all that. But anything that's over about 11 by 14, I'll have them do for me. They do a fantastic job.
And they're done optical too, so you're completely, truly analog all the way through.
I am. Because of the economy right now, I have given people the option of getting digital prints made from my film scans. But I really don't do very much of that. My clients really are very committed to the idea that I'm doing this all on film. So I find typically that they'll do most of their prints fiber, and then if they want to give a few as a gift to grandma or whatever, they'll do the digital prints.
Very, very cool. So what do you think about this transition? What are you going to be moving to instead of using the Tri-X 320? Do you have anything else that you've shot and got to play with that you really like that you're going to be able to use for what you're doing? What's your thoughts on moving forward with a new emulsion?
I think I'm still in the grieving process right now.
Yeah.
I really haven't given it too much thought just yet. It's kind of tough because for so many years having shot with Tri-X, I've got a very consistent look with it. So I'm going to have to do a little bit of playing with films and different ways of processing it to try to get it as close as possible. I really don't want it to be obvious when I stopped using Tri-X and had to go to something else. I'm not a big fan of Tri-X 400. It just doesn't look right to me. So I don't know. We'll give Ilford a shot and then we'll figure it out from there.
What do you typically do for deliverables? Do you typically find people order prints? Do you like to build albums for people? I mean, what do you deliver?
Well, mostly prints. That's really first and foremost my goal. I work really hard to get the image or maybe two images that are the big print that you see every day that makes you smile. And I've printed those on fiber up to about 48 inches or so. Super impressive. I love them. They pack a punch. They make people smile, much more so than doing 25 5x7s. So that's my first goal. There's usually some smaller prints for different parts of the wall or whatnot. But I also do a lot of coffee table books, and those are by necessity a hybrid process. They're digitally printed. But I finally found a company that I think does a really good job of keeping the film capture looking like film capture, even if it's printed digitally. So I'm very pleased with that. It's been very, very popular. I do lots of them.
What typically is the kind of client that wants you to shoot their images on film, and specifically only in black and white? What do you typically draw client-wise that's looking for this type of photography and that specific look?
My typical client tends to be very educated and very aware of art. Sometimes they're a collector. I've walked into clients' homes to do a shoot and seen original Eugene Smith prints on the wall. So they tend to be very knowledgeable with what they're looking at. Even if they don't know a lot about photography, they have an eye toward art. Some of them are strictly interested in the fact that I'm shooting film, and my style just happens to be a bonus. Others are the other way around. They like the style, they like the moods that I tend to catch, and, oh, it's cool that I shoot on film. I've never had anyone say, oh, darn, you're not a digital shooter, I guess I won't book you. I've never had that happen at all. Most people are very pleased, and even more so when they know that I have a darkroom and I process these things by hand. I think there's an appreciation of the craft for the people that I'm working with, and that helps me out a lot. I don't get into situations where I'm told what to shoot, how to shoot, would you please get this, why aren't they smiling? Yeah, definitely people that tend to be art-minded or art collectors. I actually have a lot of portrait clients that are photographers, which is always a good feeling.
No, that's always good when you can have a photographer want you to shoot their photo.
Right.
It's very cool. Do you find that you would consider yourself just photographer, or would you put yourself into a niche, and how do you deal with that when you do any kind of marketing at all? Do you say that I am a people shooter, I'm a photographer? What do you do to classify yourself and maybe put yourself outside of the circle?
I really just describe myself typically as a black and white people shooter. It kind of encompasses everything that I do. I try not to get too specific because anybody that looks at my work on my website is going to know exactly what to expect. So if you hire me to come in to do a shoot and you've looked at my website, and I'll make sure that you have, you'll know exactly what to expect. I shoot very true to what I show on my website. So I try to just let the work do the talking. I do a lot of writing. I do a lot of blog work. So if anybody's looked at my blog, they know exactly what I'm all about. I find it best that way because then the only expectations I have to fulfill are my own. That makes it a much more fun way of working.
Do you have a band called Reckless Red? So tell me how the performance and singing and this stuff interplays with your photography.
Oh, I find it all very related. It's really fun. With my music, I do a whole lot of improvising. I do a lot of work on the fly, a lot of connecting with people on the fly. I'm terrible about remembering lyrics, so I do a lot of making those up on the fly when I have to. It's definitely the same way I approach photography. I'll have certain goals in mind, like I'll have a certain song that I'm going to sing. But there's always the figuring out, okay, this isn't working, I'm going to do this. This is kind of working well, I'm going to go down that path a little bit more. Just the ability to kind of roll with it a little bit and to not be too uptight about things being perfect and what to expect. I like really gritty music. I sing a lot of gritty music. I like grain in my photographs. It's all related. I like nothing that's too polished and too pretty. I like it to have a bit of an edge to it and a story, and I always want to kind of raise the question and let the viewer or the listener kind of take the next step with it.
Very cool. Let's chat about your workshops here. You've been doing some workshops for a while. You have some coming up here. Tell me about what someone's going to find when they go to your workshop. What are you teaching at your workshops?
Well, the fun thing about the way I'm doing workshops now is that I'm keeping them very small. Typically 5 people, sometimes 7, give or take. A lot of times they're friends that have already known each other before the workshop. The great thing about teaching small workshops is I can completely customize them. So sometimes I'll have a group of photographers that come in and they're very technically strong. They know how to expose, they understand composition, and they don't really need to talk about that. But they may want to focus more on identifying their style and strengthening their style and how they're representing themselves. Or they might want to talk about different business ideas. Other times I'll have a newer group of photographers who are having issues with lighting or connecting with their subjects. So what I actually do now is I send out an advance questionnaire to all the people that have signed up, and I design the curriculum for that workshop around their specific needs. It's much more fun because that way I know that people aren't going home with questions still unanswered, or I don't have to wonder if they've gotten value for what they paid for the workshop.
So let's chat about what typically people are wanting to learn when they go to one of your workshops. What's your biggest request for people that need help and they want Cheryl to teach them this subject?
Well, the reason I initially started teaching workshops was because there were a lot of workshops that taught lighting or that would teach Photoshop or the basics. But there weren't a lot of workshops, or any actually, that I could find then that were really addressing how to find your style and how to find your voice in photography. So I think that's a much harder thing to teach, but it's a lot more fun. So a lot of the early workshops that I did were entirely focused around identifying your style, figuring out how to tap into something and be different. A lot of times I would get a group of photographers that were just bored. They'd hit a plateau and their work wasn't meaningful. They were looking for inspiration. So that really has been what my workshops have most been known for, and that's great because it's what I enjoy teaching the most. But along with that, you have to understand the basics, and you have to understand how to use light and exposure and all the technical aspects to support what you're doing and to support the emotion in the picture. So I do teach all of that, and again, it just depends on what exactly people are looking for.
So with workshops coming up here, how often do you have these? Where would people find out about what you're doing?
Well, I have a website. It's CherylJacobsWorkshops.com. It lists all the upcoming workshops as they happen. I do have more workshops than are listed on my website. Typically, that's because I'll have a private group of photographers, for example, coming up in New York, that already have a full group. So I'm specifically going out kind of as a rent-a-mentor to help them out. I'll be in Malibu next week. I'll be in Austin in April. Kind of all over the place, here, there, and everywhere.
Must be fulfilling to actually do all these workshops and have people really take a lot of information and be able to help hone people's crafts into the direction that they want to go, and maybe not so much where you want to point them. That's why it's
Absolutely.
Cool to see that the curriculum is adjusted by the attendees.
Absolutely. I don't want to teach what I do. I want to teach them how to do what they do. And it's been really rewarding. I started teaching in 2004. Actually, my very first workshop that I did formally was in the UK. So that was a little intimidating. Having not taught one before, it worked out very well. But it's really been extremely rewarding to watch the people that have attended kind of move on and shift their style and identify who they are with their work. A lot of them have done some really great things. And actually, I think you had one of my workshop attendees from Portland on a few days ago. So Heather McCabe-Bose, that was pretty fun to hear her talk. Yeah, it's been really good. I do a lot of critiquing also. I feel like quality critiques are kind of lacking right now in photography. They tend to get a bit too focused on the rule of thirds and the this and that. And I think they tend to miss the big picture. So that's one of my favorite things to do. I've critiqued people all over the world this year. So it's been great.
So how do the critiquing sessions go down? I would just send you a link to a webpage that's got my portfolio in it. People are sending you their portfolio. Are you doing one-on-one live stuff? How's the critique work?
Well, I do everything via Skype, typically, unless someone just happens to be in the Denver area, which works out great. We can video conference unless we don't have our makeup on, and then we cannot do that. But it's been really fun. You can either send a web page, or some people opt to send actual prints, which is always fantastic. It's kind of hard to critique tonality on a computer screen. I don't really know if I'm seeing the same thing that my critique is. So yeah, web pages, prints, however it works out, just not Flickr. That doesn't work out so well. It's a little confusing. And we'll talk about general direction. It's kind of like the workshop. Talk about business aspects if they need to. Talk about marketing if they need to. We'll talk a lot about quality and the personality of their work. Lots of technical stuff if that's what they need also. It's really, really rewarding.
How do you find that you have people coming to you? Do you do any marketing at all, or is it just there's so much word of mouth now that you're getting plenty of business from it?
Word of mouth is good. I really prefer to not pay for marketing, so I love things like Facebook and Twitter and the various forums and such that I'm on. It is a lot of word of mouth. If people appreciate a critique, they're going to tell their friends, and I'll get some additional work off of that. It always seems to pretty much take care of itself unless I get lazy, and then it's my own fault.
Is there any photographers that you like, that you follow, that have been an influence on what you're doing?
Knowing my personality, I can be a little bit of a mimic. I have to be very careful what I look at, because if I look too much, I'll end up copying it and not realize. So I decided very early on when I was first starting to get interested in photography to not look at a lot of other photographers' work, so I could try to develop my style as true to myself as I could. And of course, then I did my first gallery show, and everybody's comments was, oh, wow, you're obviously influenced by Sally Mann. And I had never heard of her. Since then, there are a lot of photographers that I really enjoy their work. Eugene Smith is a huge influence now. I wasn't aware of him when I started out, but very much appreciate the depth of his work and also the technical aspects of it. It's in all ways just floors me every time I see it. Joseph Sudek was a big love early on, but in terms of modern photographers, I don't really do too much looking at them. I appreciate them, but I wouldn't say that any of them are particularly influences. I tend to go old school and look at the Life magazine stuff.
Looking at your work, do you like to shoot a lot of things that have a very shallow depth of field? What's your thoughts on that kind of composition and the way that you're shooting compared to what you've seen?
Oh yeah, I love shallow depth of field. I try not to be too literal in my work. I don't want it to look like I was out doing street photography. That's not what I do. I really like to focus the viewer's attention on exactly what I found important in that picture, hence the shallow depth of field. Really, it's also a matter of practicality because I shoot usually in very low light, so I kind of have to scrape it up and use it in whatever way that you can. I like things that look a little bit dreamy. I like things that look not terribly literal. I want them to look like my version of reality. So that's typically what you'll see in my work.
When you're shooting natural light, do you use any light modifiers? Or when you're talking natural, you're talking that's all there is. Whatever's there is what I get.
Every great now and then, I might use a reflector. But it kind of goes back to the attention span thing. I just don't want to have to pay attention to it. And I don't like to work with assistants. I just find that the more people that I have around me, the less connection I can get with a subject. So I'm pretty much strictly exactly what light is there. There's a lot you can do without having to use a light modifier. You can change your angles and change your perspective and change the style, the way that you're using the light that you're given. So I find that that's made me extremely creative with how to handle difficult lighting situations. I don't even own a flash. I just don't use them. I don't like them.
No, I think that's great. Now, are you using metering that's in camera, or do you use an external meter?
I use a handheld meter all the time, and I advocate them for everyone, even digital shooters. I know a lot of them think that they're obsolete now that they've got these great in-camera meters, but the reality is most people don't understand how their in-camera meter works. The great thing about using the handheld meter right from the beginning is that it really trained my eye. When you walk into a lighting situation and you use your handheld meter and you see the numbers, you really get used to what this kind of light is going to translate to in terms of your exposure. So I can generally walk into a lighting situation and pretty well know what it's going to be. I'll still use the meter to check when I can, but it's been great for working on the fly. When there's a moment that I just don't have time to meter and I can just grab it, I find that that's a really, really valuable skill to have.
So when you're shooting, how do you like to meter where?
I like to meter for the shadows. I have a pretty good idea of exactly what my film is going to do, what my developer is going to do. And I know that if I'm metering for the shadows, then I can adjust my development accordingly. Really, the reality is with black and white film, you typically have so much latitude that you have to really kind of be trying to mess it up. I do try to get my exposure as absolutely dead on as I can because I'm not a big fan of difficult prints in the darkroom. I like to try to make it as easy for myself as I can.
Let's chat about something that you want to shoot or do photographically that you haven't been able to do yet. What's your goal or somebody that you want to shoot or something or some genre that you want to do that you really haven't had a chance to?
That's a good question. I haven't really thought about it too much because I've gotten to do so much stuff and I've gotten so much latitude with my projects that I've found them pretty much all to be very rewarding. But as a musician, I've got some really interesting musician friends and they've got interesting friends. I'm not interested in performance photography. I'm not interested in photographing musicians on stage. But I would love to photograph them backstage and before and after. I've gotten a chance to do a little bit of that, but my schedule is so full that requires some getting on a plane and going some places, and that's a little bit difficult right now.
Definitely so. So let's do this. Tell people where they can find out about your website, definitely about your blog that's quite cool, your workshops. There's three or four places they need to go look at so they can actually check out your work and see what you're up to.
My main portrait website is CherylJacobsPortraits.com. My workshop website is CherylJacobsWorkshops.com. And my blog is connected to both of those. It's photodino.wordpress.com. And I like to do a lot of writing for photographers there, whether it's little bits of advice or silly things or looking for interaction. I really like to treat it as kind of an inspirational page to keep everybody motivated and keep people thinking. So hopefully everybody will come and join me and say hi, and I can get to know people.
No, this is great stuff and just beautiful photography, Cheryl, and I really appreciate you joining us today to give us a little insight about what you're doing and your beautiful photography. And I think people should definitely look at your blog, your work, and see what you're doing. And just get this great inspiration because it's just beautiful work and just fine quality, black and white, beautiful photography.
Oh, thank you very much. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate that.
Well, there you go. Cheryl Nicolai, what a great person. Beautiful photography, a really cool use of black and white. Just a great example of fine analog photography. You definitely want to check her website out and her work. Just beautiful stuff. The Inside Analog Photography radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful over at www.fujifilmusa.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 over at www.dr5.com. Iger Studios over at igerstudios.com. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. And of course, our media partners, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group over at www.apug.org. Our photography philanthropy partners, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.geh.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photography Radio. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.